This is the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast brought to you by Art Wiederman, CPA with Ide Bailey. Whether it's taxes and investing or planning wisely, Art is the expert to make your dental practice profitable. At Ide Bailey, what inspires you inspires us. We provide a suite of accounting and advisory services dedicated to the total care of your practice. Visit our website to access our tools and resources tailored for dentists, idebailey.com/dentist. That's idebailey.com/dentist. This podcast is distributed with the understanding that Art Wiederman, CPA, and Ide Bailey, LLP are not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Listeners should consult with their business advisors before acting on any of the information or opinions shared. If you have questions and or feedback, make sure to email Art over at awiederman@idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. You can also give Art a call at 657-279-3243. Without further delay, here's your host, Dental CPA Art Wiederman.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. I'm your host, Art Wiederman. Welcome to my podcast. We're actually recording today on the first day of spring. Here in late March in my world broadcast headquarters here in Southern California. And I have a fantastic interview for you today on a topic that I've told all of you for years is one of the most important topics in the business side of dentistry. And it has to do, doctors, with your relationship with insurance companies and PPO plans. The American Dental Association has mentioned that approximately one in four dentists are looking at changing relationships or dropping PPO plans, and reimbursements for PPO plans are changing, and unfortunately, in many cases, not for the better. So my guest today is Ben Tuenay. And Ben, if you haven't heard of Ben, and I'd be surprised if you haven't, Ben is the president of Veritas Dental Resources. He is based out of Atlanta. And Ben has spent his entire career helping doctors not only get better reimbursements if they choose to be in PPO plans, but also if they choose to exit one or more of those plans to help them to do that. And Ben is as good as it gets in the dental profession in doing this work, and that's why I'm honored and privileged to have him on this call. So we'll get to Ben in a moment, but I want to share some information with you. First of all, I want to thank my wonderful partner in this now in our seventh year journey, Decisions in Dentistry magazine, Lorraine Kent and her team, the best clinical content out there. Go to www.decisionsindentistry.com. They have a great magazine. It's all research-based. They have 140 CE courses for a very, very reasonable price. So go to www.decisionsindentistry.com. And this podcast is going to go up on the internet, I believe, second week of April. And I am very excited to tell you that I am working with three local dental societies here in Southern California, the Harbor Dental Society, the Orange County Dental Society, and the San Gabriel Valley Dental Society, along with our CPA firm, Ide Bailey, and our dental brokerage, Wiederman Madurowitz Partnership, to bring you a four-part webinar series on the business of dentistry. And we're going to get you some CE credits for this stuff, which I'm very excited about. So put down on your calendars, okay, Wednesday, April 23rd, 2025, you'll get one CEU core CE credit from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Wednesday, April 23rd, that's Pacific time. So that would be 9 to 11 on the East Coast and et cetera, et cetera. I will be the moderator, and I am excited to have two wonderful speakers, one of whom is the gentleman that you're going to hear for the next hour, Ben Tuenay. Ben is going to talk about his 7 steps to negotiating PPO fees and firing PPOs without your patients firing you. We're going to talk about some of that today, but you're going to get a much deeper dive on April 23rd. And what I'm really excited about is my other speaker is Dr. Sherilyn Sheets, who is a prosthodontist out of Newport Beach, California, one of the most prominent dentists in the world. And her topic, which is what's going to get you the CE, is assessing structural integrity of teeth and implants using AI and quantitative percussion diagnostics, QPD. And it's I've seen some of this technology. It's amazing. And Dr. Sheets is as good as it gets. So if you are interested in signing up for this webinar, please send me an email at A Wiederman. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N. At Eidbailly, Eidbailly.com. And we'll get you the QR code and get you signed up. Again, Wednesday, April 23rd, 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific time, Dr. Sherilyn Sheets and Ben Tuene. I also want to again tell you we're right in the heart of tax filing season. I've got some great recordings that you're going to be hearing coming up. We're going to be publishing on April 23rd an interview with Ben Peeler. I guess I have to have people named Ben on my podcast on a regular basis. So we have Ben Tuene today and Ben Peeler on the 23rd. Ben is a former Internal Revenue Service agent, and we're going to be talking about the changes that are coming to the IRS. Folks, the IRS is cutting up to 50% of their 90,000 employees. And we're going to talk about what that means for you as a dentist and your taxes and audits and all that kind of stuff. So we got a lot of great stuff coming up there. So with that in mind, and one more thing, obviously, in the middle of tax season, if you get a call from your CPA and they're telling you on April the 14th that you owe $50,000 and you didn't know about it, that's how we get a lot of our new clients. We've got your back. We work with hundreds of dentists in our CPA firm, Eidbailly. Please give me a call, 657-279-3243 or awiederman@eidbailly.com.
Be sure to check out our new Eidbailly podcast, Ebb and Flow, a business podcast providing inspired insight on issues and trends the middle market faces. Hear unique business stories, get answers to frequently asked and unasked questions, and understand business topics that matter to you. Available now on your favorite podcast platform.
All right. With that, folks, I want to get to my good friend and my guest, Ben Tuene. So Ben, as I said, is the president of Veritas Dental Resources. He's been in dentistry almost 20 years. I'm going to let Ben tell his journey here in a minute, but to date, Ben has worked with over 6,000 dentists, influencing over $3 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars of newly negotiated revenues for his clients. Again, he's the president of Veritas Dental Solutions. He's going on his 21st year as a professional speaker, so if you have a chance, he's probably coming to a meeting near you. He sits on the board of directors for the Dental Business School, Business Ownership, Mentoring of America, the Dental Leadership Academy, and he is a fellow podcaster, co-host of the Navigating Dental Insurance podcast, recognized by several state dental associations and various dental study clubs as the authority on PPO strategies and PPO fee negotiating. Ben, you sound like a really like prominent guy, huh? Welcome to the Art of Dental Finance and Management.
Wow, Art, that was a great introduction there. I love just your energy, and you know, you're kind of like the type of podcaster out there that I feel a lot of people like being on your show, and I'm looking forward to today's conversation.
Well, we're gonna have a great time here. I mean, you and I have shared a stage in the past. I love your energy, and I love you. I remember the dance you did on stage with you and I and Gary Takis. Now, I thought that was a Samoan, but then you told me that was kind of more New Zealandish. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So, funny thing is, if you Google Parliament's Haka New Zealand, you'll find a recent. Iteration of that dance by one of the members of parliament in New Zealand. It's funny because she was protesting some of the bills that were being put on the table that would strip the natives of their rights, and sort of it looked like it was a measure to wipe out a lot of the historical facts. And so they used that haka as a means of protest, which is what the haka is designed for. It's designed for two things. Number one, it was originally created to be a war dance to intimidate those that you're about to join the battlefield against. But because those people were your family members, the haka also serves not just as a war dance, but a cry for love and a cry for peace, a cry for acceptance and understanding. And I do the haka more for entertainment value, you know, but also to sort of honor those two things, is to protest the insurance industry and to sort of engage in a cultural war cry to say we could do better, you know, but also a plea for the insurance companies and the doctors to sort of have more collaboration so we can make meaningful change that impacts all parties, especially our patients, for the better, you know. So that's why I do it. It's culturally driven, which I am part Maori, is just sharing a piece of my culture with the world from the context of, it's not all about fighting, it's about unifying and coming together, you know.
Well, my question for you, Ben, is does this work in intimidating two adult children?
To a certain extent.
And then now my audience knows my kids. My son's Nathan, and Forrest is 6'6", so there's no intimidating him. But I'm just kidding. Anyway, we're gonna have a great conversation today. It really is, and you are as much of an expert on these topics as anybody. But let's start off by I told the audience a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about your professional journey and how you got to where you are today as doing the work that you do.
Yeah, thank you, Art. So I got involved in dentistry back in 2007. I was recruited to work for a DSO. They found me somehow, mainly because they wanted my skills to negotiate. They wanted my negotiating skills. There were rumors circulating at that time that insurance carriers were negotiating fees, but no, there were no services available and there were no courses to take to learn how to do it. And so the CEO for that company in Arizona decided, let's just find somebody that understands how to negotiate and let's just let that person figure it out. So they interviewed me, and what attracted me about dentistry is, you know, that was right before the recession. I was getting these sales pitches about, oh, healthcare is a recession-proof industry. You know, it ended up not being the case in 2008, but, you know, for dentistry, that is. But I still fell in love with the industry from the perspective of, within the first year of being hired, I figured out how to negotiate. And I cracked the code on that. I did the impossible, because everybody, like all the practice administrators that had 30, 40 years of experience were saying, good luck. You're not going to get anywhere. And once I figured it out, it was groundbreaking, because there were no articles. There was no example on how to do this. There was no information whatsoever about the fact that insurance carriers do negotiate. And I recognized that this was a blue ocean space in dentistry that needed to be addressed. And that's why I started a business, is because, you know, the doctors that worked for this DSO, they came to me and complained and said, how in the heck did you get $1,000 a crown at the group, but at my practice, I'm getting $550 for a crown? It's like, it's the same insurance company and I'm only 10 miles away. So as I started to explore that, I immediately saw demand, and naturally the demand just kind of knocked on my door. And so, you know, this is my third company in this space. The others that I've built and sold, Veritas is the brand that we're going to stick with, mostly because we created Veritas to address the growing demand. If you sell companies that do the same thing, you still get sucked into it because there's just not enough companies out there that provide the service. So that's why we exist, is to address the ever-growing need of doctors needing to negotiate with insurance.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about today, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say, because I know the topic, I know the challenges, but I learn from you and others in this industry every time I get to have the honor and privilege of having people on my podcast. So let's start out the conversation to talk to our doctors who are contracted with PPOs, and that is a lot of them, many of them, probably the majority of dentists are contracted in some way, shape, or form of PPOs. So Ben, as a dental CPA, I get the question all the time, do insurance, and you touched on this a little bit, we're now in 2025, do insurance companies negotiate on their contracted reimbursements? And maybe just give us an overview of what does the market look like right now? What are insurance companies doing? Now, you and I are not going to mention any insurance companies by name. So anytime you have an example, just call them XYZ Insurance Company, of course. And that will keep everybody happy. And then just kind of tell us what's going on in the marketplace right now.
Absolutely. And thank you for that reminder, Art. You know, in the end, this kind of feedback is not intended to offend the insurance industry, which, you know, when you look at the truth of this and how it's told from the clinical side, naturally, you know, any feedback regarding the thoughts of doctors as it pertains to reimbursements and their frustrations, it does draw negative attention against insurance carriers. So yes, we will not mention them by name.
No, we will not. But we will. No. Our lawyers will be very happy, and we will save legal fees by not doing that.
Yes. So the state of the industry right now as it pertains to insurance is that all insurance companies are negotiating. And the reason why is because there's a trend that is not stopping of doctors fleeing the insurance contracts and going out of network. And that started back in 2020, where, you know, almost immediately throughout the pandemic, as people started to return to their businesses, there was resistance with a lot of people wanting to go back, you know, and a call for higher wages, which really, really changed the dynamics of dental practices, you know, where the profitability component of practices were at a huge threat, and they still are, you know. And so a lot of practice doctors have chosen to go out of network, and that's created a nice balance in the industry. And that balance is going to go on for the next 5 to 10 years. And that balance is going to be about two things. Number one, reimbursement levels. And then number two, coverage. Because when you really boil down, like look at the insurance industry numbers, the insurance industry naturally has been resisting fee increases. They've done that from the very beginning. In the 1980s, when they started to develop what we now know as PPO plans, you know, they historically had what was called indemnity plans, where, you know, you could use your benefits anywhere. And it was mostly preventative care. You know, it's $1,500 annual max, but it was designed to cover your preventative care. The restorative components started to be added with the PPO culture in the 80s, 90s, and all the way to today. But get this, Art, when you look at what percentage of people that have a PPO plan reach their annual maximum, it's 5.7%. Well, let's call it 6%. And that's been the same for several decades. What percentage of people get a restorative procedure done, which is tracked by paying a deductible, right? If you're in network, you pay the deductible at the restorative visit. And only 22% of people with insurance do that every single year. And then what percentage of adults? That's your largest category of higher dollar amount claims. That's where the most of the payouts are on insurance is adult dentistry. Only 37% of adults, unlike DentaCal, Medi-Cal in California, you have 52% of people that use those plans. But in the commercial market, it's only 37% of adults.
It's amazing about what. And when I tell people that I talk to, both people in the industry and out, that for years, Ben, less than 50% of the American public goes to a dentist on a regular basis.
That is true. Yeah.
I mean, and so that's part of the issue, and that's another conversation for another day. But so you're saying 37% of adults use their insurance benefits.
Correct. And that is, the pattern that you're seeing here, Art, is that dental insurance is heavily underutilized. You know, that's why, when you look at states, and you can file a Freedom of Information Act to get these disclosures from the federal government regarding any insurance care, because they all report their numbers, is that when you buy a dental insurance plan and it's considered a fully insured plan, with most insurance institutions, only half of what you pay in premium go towards your benefits, And they call that a loss ratio, right? It's 50% loss ratio there. 50% of the money you pay for insurance goes towards your benefits. What a terrible way to insure your health, you know? But and most people don't know that. That's what feeds into the insurance company's profitability, because they only make, you know, they only charge maybe 10% or less than that for administering self-funded plans. They don't make a whole lot of money on self-funded plans. So the fully insured market is where the money's coming in, and the insurance industry is hell-bent on minimizing payouts in an effort to, you know, look better on Wall Street, you know?
And Ben, what you're saying is that 63% of the people that, now is this 63% of the people that have insurance don't use it? Is that what you're saying?
Among adults, correct.
Among adults. That is, so that means that 63% of the people are paying premiums to the insurance company, and the insurance company is not paying anything out for them, right? Have I got that right?
Exactly. It is the perfect business model if you're looking for extremely profitable business with very little effort, you know, activity. Right. Because all you have to do is just not pay claims, you know, or at least deny. And so the last thing I'll mention on this question, Art, is we all know, sadly, that a United Healthcare CEO was gunned down on the streets of New York City.
Horrible, horrible.
And that was a protest on the side of the patients, you know. And so when you're being attacked by all these different angles, that the employers, the patients themselves are protesting, and I don't ever advocate protesting with violence that way. That's not the best way to solve things.
Of course not.
Yeah. But we have to engage in negotiations with insurance directly, because there is change that's already here, you know? And so every insurance plan is negotiating. The key is finding the right leverage and finding the right mechanisms to negotiate in a way where, you know, the efforts that you do spend on negotiations actually are meaningful. Too many practices these days try and they give up and they never try again. Don't give up.
Well, I guess my next question, Ben, would be this is, you know, obviously if you are a large DSO with hundreds of practices, you probably have more leverage. And most of my audience are single practice dentists all over the country who are basically saying, well, wait a minute, I'm just a single dentist who does, you know, a million a year. How am I going to have any leverage? How does that work?
Excellent question. So on the DSO side, to answer your question, yes, DSOs have significantly more leverage than solo practitioners. Let me give you an example of why. So when I go out, like, let's say I own 10 practices and the 11th practice, they're all in the same county. And when I buy the 11th practice, all of the fee schedules from that selling doctor are 20-30% higher than every other practice that I already have. So when I buy that practice, I have full rights and full access to the assets if you're doing an asset purchase agreement, right, including the mechanisms that determine how much revenue they're getting, which are the fee schedules, right? So you have full privileges to pursue those fee schedules with the insurance carrier. If I have 10 other practices and I have associates that are in a constant need to get credentialed, because that's just the way group practice dynamics work, right? People come in, they go all the time. To the insurance representative, what they're thinking is, oh yeah, I will honor that fee schedule for all the other 10 practices in exchange for an agreement with you that we will help with the credentialing for all the new associates that join your practice. And, you know, and all we ask is that we do that once they start, right? And that gives the insurance representative a bonus. Because, you know, they're tasked to maintain a certain number of providers that are supposed to be a network per zip code and per what they call GeoZip, which is the first three digits of a zip code. So DSOs have a greater ability to feed those bonus numbers to those representatives. And that's why DSOs typically get preferential treatment. Solo practitioners, on the other hand, you just can't go to your colleagues to look at their fee schedules and then use that data. If let's say your colleague next door has a higher fee schedule, you can't use that data to represent your own negotiations, because that's 100% prohibited by federal antitrust laws.
Yeah, that's collusion, that's RICO, that's all that kind of stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. And these days, you get the book thrown at you. You do get quite a bit of legal trouble. You do get into a lot of legal trouble if you attempt that.
I mean, Ben, I've had dentists who have come to me and said, listen, we only have three in our town. We're thinking about all getting together and kind of negotiating, fixing the fees. And I said, if you enjoy prison stripes, you go ahead and do that. I mean, there's some bad, bad penalties for doing that.
Correct. Always consult with healthcare attorneys that understand antitrust. You know, the solution for that doctor in that town is you talk to a healthcare attorney about building an independent practitioner association, but it can't just be limited to your town. Otherwise, it's a direct, influence on fee fixing for the area. But a good healthcare attorneys would help you figure that out to keep steer of any regulatory issues that would get you into big trouble. So be very careful there. In terms of negotiations. But let me give you the leverage. As a sole practitioner, how do you get the DSO leverage? So the good thing is if you practice next to a DSO, you're doing a lot of second opinions, That's just how that works. I mean, we get second opinions from other practices that are not DSOs all the time. That's just how the industry operates. When a patient comes in and they produce the treatment plan from the other practice that details out the allowed amounts, the co-payments, all the financial information that that practice has under contract with an insurance carrier, and let's say those fees are higher than your office fees, that is one of the best pieces of leverage that you can receive, because number one, you did not seek that information out. It came to you without any intent for you to go and get it. And so pay attention to second opinion information. I always reach out to the insurance carrier and say, hey, I didn't store that information, but I was shocked when I saw it when the patient came in for a second opinion, that I'm in network with the same dental plan and we share the same zip code as that practice, but you're compensating them 30 to 40% higher than us. That is actually considered a violation of antitrust on a part of antitrust that is still in force against insurance carriers, and it's called restraint in trade. Very similar to that of, you could look up in Google price discrimination regulations or fee discrimination regulations. That's basically what restraint in trade is. And this component of antitrust is that it is discriminatory. Like, what justification does an insurance carrier have compensating another group or another doctor higher than you? Especially if there's data to indicate that the average age and experience of the doctors at that group are significantly less than your experience. You know, it's like, what gives? You know, why am I not being treated this fairly? So that's the very similar type of leverage that DSOs almost always inherit when they buy new practices and get new fee schedule data. Is just pay attention to second opinion data, and you'll be golden in the sense of having some pretty concrete leverage to capture those higher fees that you're seeing other practices getting.
Well, we should just quit the podcast right now, because you've just given my listeners just incredible information. But we're not done with you yet, Ben. All right. So now I know, one of my favorite TV shows is The Big Bang Theory, and Sheldon Cooper loves trains. Well, they have trains in your world, from what I understand. And explain what a train is in dentistry, and signing up a dentist's contract with, maybe they think they're contracted with one insurance company, but then maybe they're contracted with a whole bunch. Is that a good thing, bad thing? How do they all work?
Yeah, that's actually a great analogy. I love trains too. And so an umbrella network is essentially the engine of the train. They're the engine that governs the contract and the fee schedule. And all the different cars are the MetLifes. Sorry, we shouldn't. Well, I guess it's okay to mention. Yeah, it's the major insurance carriers that are out there that lease the engine, right? They lease the fee schedule. They lease the contract for that train, if you will. And so you have a bunch of insurance carriers that latch on to umbrella networks. And the reason why is because historically, umbrella networks have an easier time credentialing new doctors because they usually advertise higher fees. So doctors are more willing to accept those higher fees compared to the direct contract fees that are much lower. So in zip codes or geozips where a certain insurance carrier has far less in-network participation, they'll contact one of the umbrella networks and say, hey, can we enter into an agreement to lease your network of doctors so that we can list them as in-network on our side? And that is primarily designed to help with sales, because one of the top criteria for an employer is, number one, of course, the premium. How much is it going to cost for us to get dental insurance? But number two, what does the access look like? How many providers do you have? And so insurances with low provider counts, they'll just pick up the phone and lease a network, an umbrella network out there, so that they look a lot larger in terms of in-network status than they actually are.
Okay. Now, one thing, Ben, is I know that there are some of these umbrella plans, and that's why it's so important, guys, and we're going to let Ben talk a little bit about what he does at Veritas, but it's so important that if you're going to sign up with an insurance plan, it's like any other legal contract. You've got to read the contract. Now, don't some of these contracts, Ben, actually say, let's say that I've got 8 companies and the umbrella on the train, if you will, 8 cars, right? Don't some of these plans actually say that if you are signed up with this plan and now you're part of this umbrella policy, that you may actually get the lowest reimbursement of any of those 8? Are there trains and umbrella plans like that? I've heard of that. Is that still the case?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So here's the new piece of information I want to share, because what you said, Art, is exactly the case. But in the past, if you had a direct contract with any given insurance plan that does lease out umbrella networks, and let's say you're in network with one of the umbrella networks that PPO plan uses, but let's say your direct contract with that particular PPO plan is higher than the umbrella network. Now, in the past, and this is before 2023, if you had a direct contract with that PPO plan, the direct contract was king in terms of determining what fee schedule the insurance carrier is going to use. So the direct contract fees were always in use. These days, you have contract language that's modified that says is exactly what you just said, Art, is that if I have a direct contract, but if I'm also in network with an affiliate an umbrella affiliate that includes that particular insurance plan, the insurance carrier, in terms of the new contract language, would have a right to downgrade your reimbursements to the lower of the two fee schedules. And it doesn't end there.
Sure it doesn't.
No. There's never just one of those options. You know, normally if you're in network directly with one PPO plan and that PPO plan does use other umbrella networks, chances are you're probably in network with 5 options that PPO plan can use. And you don't know all of those relationships until the EOBs come in. Right. And now they pay off of one fee schedule that's lower. And then they go to another fee schedule that's even lower. And they go back and forth between those two fee schedules. So the solution to that is, let's say you have a direct contract and it's the highest. But you have to opt out of that relationship with all the other 4 options, the other 4 contract options. So you want to identify what are the other plans that this network uses, and checking out the EOBs and making note of that is one way to find out. Or you can call that insurance carrier and just say, hey, who do you lease your network out to? What are all the companies that you have a leasing arrangement with? And then you get that list and send all of them an opt-out notice and say, I do not wish to be part of this network under your umbrella. I wish to opt out. And that's how you keep the insurance carriers to one reimbursement option, is to fill to end, or, well, you don't have to terminate all the other contracts. You just have to opt out in an effort to force the insurance plan to use the one fee schedule that's the highest.
But most dentists don't know that, and they just go along and they go, oh, well, I guess this is what I signed up for. And they're getting, you know, ridiculously low reimbursements. I got so much I got to talk to you about, and I wish we could do this for 3 hours, but we can't. So let's talk about a dentist who buys a practice, Ben, and the seller is contracted with insurance companies. I know that, and we're going to let you talk about what Veritas does. I know part of what you do is credentialing. So does a buyer of a dental practice get the same fee schedule that the seller had? How does that work?
That's another great question.
We only ask great questions here, you know, right?
Yeah,
that's right. That's required by law.
Yeah, they always say that you know, CPAs make for the best business consultants and coaches, you know, because y'all ask really great questions and you know numbers very well, more than most.
My life is a math problem. That's my tagline. So anyway, so how does it work when we buy a practice?
Yes. So essentially, this is a part that you have to be very careful. As part of your due diligence, you do need to vet out whether you can retain those fee schedules from every insurance plan. You know, there are limitations on what doctors are doing these days in terms of due diligence when they're looking at insurance, and they're only looking at the biggest payers, right? A good example, and this example is just factual. You know, you have some companies that have two different tiers. You know, they have one level that's at a lower fee schedule, and then another level that's at a higher fee schedule. But as a new doctor that's getting credentialed, you can't even contract at that higher tier level at all because it's no longer available. All the other doctors have been around for a while. They're what's called grandfathered into those contracts. And so you have to consider that and how that's going to impact your collections, right? And it's very simple. Like when you go to that insurance carrier and say, what is the difference in fees? You could even ask them to say, hey, you have the numbers. What would that equate to in terms of last 12 months claims data? I mean, what would revenue look like under the new contract, you know? And those are things that you want to ask the insurance representatives from the perspective of just saying, hey, I'm just trying to figure out my due diligence to see if I'm going to move forward with this practice or not. And once you have all those confirmations on what the fee schedules are, of course, you're planning at that point. You know, I'm not an expert in terms of how those fee schedules tie into valuation, but I imagine that they're probably important for you to understand those numbers. But to answer your question, Art, these days, if you buy a practice that does have negotiated fees or special contracts that are no longer available, I highly recommend vetting all of that out as part of the due diligence process.
Yep, absolutely. Great advice. One more question on this, and then I want you to give out your information, and then we're going to talk about going out of network, which is the second part of our conversation today. How about a doctor who's starting up a practice? And they all tell me when they're starting up practice, because we consult with them, I've just got to sign up with every PPO out there because I have no patients coming into the practice, or someone who's feeling that their marketing isn't working and the only way they're going to get new patients is to sign up. What do you tell the dentists that are looking at expanding and signing up with PPOs, especially ones that are starting practices?
Yeah, so for startup practices, it's actually true. I mean, the data is I would say maybe in the last 2 to 3 years, as doctors go in network, they are getting new patients. But again, it comes at a cost, right? Your write-off or your discount. If you're in network, it truly is, you know, it should be considered a marketing expense, that write-off, right? Yep. But in exchange, you're getting new patients, but those patients aren't actually going to the PPO directories to find you. So there are several dental schools, mostly out of the Midwest, that put together some studies, and they concluded that less than 5% of people that have dental insurance actually find their dentist by going to the find a dentist portal, the insurance website. 95% of patients come through other means, referral. Google being one of the number one components these days in terms of how people are finding their dentist. But what's going on is that people are Googling a dentist, not feeling very confident or understanding on how their provider, their insurance portals work. So they just call those practices and say, hey, do you take such and such insurance plan, right? So your ability as a startup owner, practice owner, to say yes to that question is what influences those patients to come in. It's not because I'm in network. Being in network is not the reason why people are calling. People are finding you by other ways. So friend. To answer your question, yeah, social media, friend, Google, you know. But to answer your question, in network is easy. It's an easier way because it doesn't require a whole lot of training to schedule patients, or at least to influence patients to come in. So on the flip side, Art, and this is actually, it doesn't happen as much, is you have doctors that try to do fee-for-service from the very beginning. Now, I'm not an expert on the psychology as to why there's a difference between certain fee-for-service practices that just kill it versus the majority of fee-for-service startup practices that are very slow, that compared to a PPO practice are significantly slower. But the one thing that I see with fee-for-service startup practices that are successful is the practice owner is getting a lot of training, number one, on how to deal with patients from an out-of-network perspective. So they have a different culture and a different type of person that's working the front desk. And that person that's working the front desk is a salesperson. They have a really good people presence. And they, you know, when they pick up the phone, you just feel warm and fuzzy as a stranger on the other line trying to figure out whether you're going to schedule with this office or not. And then the doctor, he or she is an influencer, you know, which is a very small percentage of doctors out there. They influence people and gain their trust. That influences people to pick up the phone and call. And they have, you know, a former personal banker that's answering the phone up front that's getting a higher wage than normal compared to most front office people. But it's an investment into those practices because they really believe that if we get somebody that's up there that's good at persuading patients, we're gonna convert a lot of these patients into active patients into the practice. So it's a lot more work and it's a lot more of an investment to do a model like that. So most doctors these days, when they're doing startups, they are joining PPOs just because it's an easier path. I think your second question was regarding existing practices. Is that right, Art?
If someone wants to, you know, they've got an existing practice, they're not getting a lot of new patients, they're not as busy as they would like. So they're thinking, well, gee, I'll sign up with some insurance plans. It'll bring me more patients.
Yes. So we are seeing an uptick in the trend of in-network practices capturing more new patients, but it's not a very large number. In fact, when I talk to marketing firms that collect this data, fee-for-service practices are fielding almost the same amount of calls as a PPO practice in terms of patients trying to find a new dentist, right? But those patients are just shopping around. Just like the startup practice example, being in-network as an existing practice, what that does is it just makes it easy for the patient to say yes. But you don't really see a really big overnight difference as an existing practice in terms of the phone ringing off the hook as a result of going in network. That is not the case. Most practices, they join a PPO for marketing purposes and they're not as busier than they used to be for a year or two, right? Until the momentum starts to pick back up. The practices that do their own external marketing in conjunction with joining PPOs, the phone rings off of a hook. Well, the phone does have the potential to ring more. But again, these people are not finding their dentists on the PPO portals. So when they call in, the first question they ask is, if you take my insurance. So the marketing effort is what's influencing more patients for PPO practices that are joining PPOs compared to slow practices that are joining PPOs and not doing any marketing. Those practices are consistently not. They don't get busy to the expectations of how busy they want to be. It just does not happen quickly enough for them unless they engage in their own marketing efforts to make themselves visible to the market.
So, folks, this podcast is probably going to go a little longer, not much, than my normal one because this is such an important topic, and we haven't even started to touch on going out of network with insurance. But Ben, before we do that. You are the president of Veritas. I want you to tell my audience a little bit about what you do. Guys, here's the deal. It's like anything else. You go to a good CPA to get your taxes and accounting done. You go to a good attorney, a dental attorney. You always want to use dental specialists. So if you are looking at doing anything or evaluating anything regarding your relationship with insurance, I would strongly encourage you to give Ben a call. So Ben, talk a little bit about what your company does and then give out some contact information as to how my listeners can get a hold of you, please.
Well, thank you, Art. I appreciate that. Yes, our company is called Veritas Dental Resources. You can go to veritasdentalresources.com. Veritas is spelled V as in Victor, E-R-I-T-A-S, dentalresources.com. Or you know, phone number 888-808-4513. Or you can shoot me an email. It's just ben@veritasdentalresources.com. one offering that we want to give it as a thank you for Art and inviting us into the podcast today is that if any of you want a fee schedule assessment on the standard office fees, we use a program called NDAS, and we can pull the percentiles just so that you can see where you stack up against your colleagues in your community. That is complimentary. Anybody that wants it, just email saying, hey, I heard you're on Art's podcast. And you can request that and you'll get that for free if any of you find it. Well, if anybody needs an assessment on how they stack up against the area percentiles.
And we'll make sure we put Ben's information in the show notes when it does go live on the internet. All right, let's switch gears here, Ben. I hear, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, that approximately, and maybe you've got different statistics, one out of four dentists in the United States are going to be changing their relationship in one way, shape, or form with insurance companies. Okay, so let's start out by, let's paint this thing with a happy face. What is your experience when dentists go out of network with one or more insurance companies? Are they happier? Do they make more money? Do they have insomnia because they're worrying about their practice? How does this work?
That's a great question. So the feelings about your out-of-network journey, they entirely depend on your process and how you go about doing it. I never recommend fast-pacing out-of-network. Even if, let's say, you're booked out a whole 12 months in your hygiene schedule, you do need some patient attrition. You need to thin out the patient base to make room for new patients, you know, and as well as make room for a nice balance with your existing patients so they can at least use two recall visits a year and not run the risk of leaving your practice because they're not able to use their benefits that they want to, you know. So if you're busy, still slow pace it, mainly because with current economic conditions, especially if you're in an environment where there's a lot of federal workers, there's uncertainty there too with those with the federal community in terms of layoffs and things of that nature. But layoffs are not exclusive to federal. There are millions of businesses these days that are doing layoffs. The economy is just not a very happy place for Americans right now, but that's going to be short-lived, hopefully, right? We usually see these economies, these slowdowns bounce back at some point in the future. But, you know, between now and then, you have to be very careful in terms of out-of-network strategies as far as the timeline in which you employ it. I recommend a slow-paced approach where we're picking one dental plan, and no, it's not the one that has the lowest fee schedule. It's the one that has the best benefits. And it's the one that we can tolerate going out of network with because their out of network benefits are even better. And there are four particular insurance plans that I recommend. We, you know, as per the promise today, we're not going to mention any insurance carriers out of respect for them. And so if you're curious as to the four ones that I recommend, shoot me an email and I can give you some guidance there. I pick one of those four and I use that as a training platform to get the team members and the patients prepared for this whole out-of-network process. And I usually do it very lightly, like a non-committal fashion, where we sit down with these patients as they're coming in. That is the best approach to prepare patients is in the hygiene chair, the doctor chair, we're just giving them a brief disclosure that we're thinking about maybe going out of network with their dental plan. And the reason why is because under the current in-network terms, they're very restrictive. Like those restrictions make it difficult for us to sustain the standard of care and the type of quality of care that we really believe in. And so to us, the quality is just non-negotiable, and we will always make changes whenever there are threats towards quality. But on this one, because it's tied to your insurance, we're investigating it just to figure out the best path to go. Out of network is one of those ways that we think might be helpful. But if we end up going that path, we're going to let you know in writing. But if you do have questions or concerns about that, over the course of the next few months, we're going to be researching all questions as it pertains to all options, including out-of-network options. But in the end, the whole purpose is we just care about you, and we really care about the quality that you receive to where a change is going to happen in an effort for us to protect that quality. And that's it. You know, you're not putting the patient on the spot or asking the question, making them feel uncomfortable. We're just giving them a non-committal disclosure that is designed to influence the patient to think about their desire for quality over a discount. So on month six, you know, you go through this activity for at least 6 months. By month six, your team members are going to say, holy smokes, this is not bad. Patients are not really complaining. It seems like most patients are going to stay. A few said that they're not, and that's okay. But we're very pleased with the process as a team, and we're confident making the next step. So that whole process is designed for them too, to kind of instill some confidence in them to move forward with the next steps and eventually a phase two process of going out of network with more plans. So on month six, we send a letter, and that letter, Art, it basically says we thought about, you know, all, well, we considered everybody's feedback. We did research all the questions, and overwhelmingly out of network looks like the path for us to go. And even better, you and everybody else are totally fine with us proceeding with that move, because quality seems to be important to you just as much as it is to us. So we have now decided to proceed with next steps. Here's what to expect. Now you outline, you know, just all the basic stuff that they don't have to leave. You'll still file benefits, all the stuff that we all know. What that does to patients, Art, is it solidifies their loyalty to you, the ones that will stay, because they're going to think, wow, they included me in a business decision that they could have made on their own, but I just really appreciate that they consulted me and the other patients and arrived at a decision that's beneficial for all of us, you know? And that's in the polling data that we send out to patients. That's exactly the sentiment that we hear, is they feel loyal because they really feel like they're part of the family. They feel like they're part of the practice, and they're here to stay because they love it. You know, they love that customer service. And then you send that letter out, and then send your termination to insurance 2 weeks later. By the time the insurance letters reach the patients, most patients don't even read them. They look at them like, oh, I already, you know, the doctor told me twice. Yeah.
Two things I want to comment on. Number one is that it is really important, doctors, and we've talked about this on this podcast before, it is really important that before, in my opinion, and I'd love to hear what you have to say, Ben, before you even think about going out of network with any plans, that you have an environment in your practice where your patients 150% trust you. And because if they trust you, and you then explain to them why you've made this difficult decision, they'll understand it. But if you have a practice where you're just a commodity and it's a price thing and they're seeing a different dentist every time and the office is not great and they just come there because they kind of have to, then it's going to be harder and those patients might go elsewhere. The other thing has been in my experience, a lot of patients don't understand, and you had mentioned this when you were talking a little earlier, is that when the front office person says that we're making this change to go out of network, the patient immediately thinks, oh, crap, I can't come here anymore. And that's not true. Mm-hmm. So those are two important things, I think. It's about having trust that your patients trust you.
Yes, yes. You hit the nail on the head because you can go through that 6 month journey and talk to patients, but if the patients are there because the number one reason is because you're in network and that's it, and there's really no customer service loyalty towards you, you do have higher attrition. And so you have to be at your A game as it pertains to this whole process, and hopefully have had experiences with the patient where the patients have had that wow experience with you, right? So yes, customer service is very important. I always like to believe, based upon when I look at practices that have higher rate of attrition compared to those that don't have as high attrition, is the ones that have patient attrition under control, they're really great at customer service, but the doctors and practice owners have done a great job getting their team members to buy into the cause. And you want to approach this to your team members as, this is a righteous cause, and we want to get you surrounding, you know, at least to rally behind this, because in the end, when you really think about it as a practice owner, no insurance carrier keeps up with inflation with their reimbursements. And I don't think they ever will. I mean, I invite any insurance carriers to challenge me on that. that'll be a pleasant surprise if they come back and say, no, we're planning on making that change. That's wonderful. But I don't think they will.
Yeah. And then you woke up, right? There you go. So yeah. That was one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is how do we address the fear of the dental team that, oh my gosh, doctor, if we go out of network, we're going to lose all of our patients.
Yes. And so that is why that 6-month process is very important is I usually respond to team members and say, okay, well, let's pump the brakes here. What we want to do, that's a very valid concern, is what we want to do is let's just talk to patients and hear them out. And this is what we're going to say to them. It's the same script, right, that we're thinking about out of network and all that. And if you at least convince your team members that, hey, I promise that we're not going to make a decision unless the feedback looks good, that sick, you know, by month 2 and 3, most team members will come back and say, you know, we're not as nervous now because everybody seems to be okay with this. So I think we're good, but let's just continue talking to patients to vet them out more. No patients react negatively and say, I hate you. Why did you abandon me? Because we're not committing to it, right? We're just talking to them and we're not soliciting a knee-jerk reaction from these patients. When patients hear the argument about quality, the number one thing people associate quality with is pain-free in dentistry. And well, at least among our polling data, and I don't know if we've asked a question to solicit that to be the number one response, but that's how people are responding, is they're saying, you know, quality to me, you know, number one is a pain-free experience, but also making sure that I don't have to pay for repair work, right? So those two components, pain and money, you know? And so, you know, with that said, as far as the patient dynamics is that when we go through this process, we naturally convince our own team members that everything's going to be okay. But if patient reaction is not positive, then you have to evaluate, well, what are we saying to the patients that's causing them to have this enormous amount of dissatisfaction with this disclosure, you know? Unfortunately, we're not committing. We haven't told them that we've committed to that. So they're still an active patient, you know? So that's how you address when team members have concerns, is you go through that 6-month journey. And you can do that just for your team members and say, we're going to do this for you. We're just going to find out, see what patients say.
Exactly. I got a couple more things to cover with you. Like you say, as much as I'd love to sit here and talk for 2 hours about this, because it's a fascinating topic. How much notice, if we are choosing to go out of network with an insurance company, you've gone through your 6-month process. We've told all of the patients what's going on. Now we're going to tell the insurance company. In most of these plans, how much notice do you have to give them to get out of a plan?
Great question. So if you have a direct contract, the basic, most contracts have a 90-day termination clause baked in. But during the 6-month period, I actually advise that that's something that you have to find out. Figure out from the insurance what the termination period is. And that way, when you do send your termination letter, you can make some, you can quote some timelines that are most likely going to be very accurate in terms of when you're going to expect to be out of network, right? So 60 to 90 days. But if you do have a contract through an umbrella network and all you're doing is opting out of that particular insurance plan through the umbrella, but still retaining the umbrella network as in network, those umbrella networks usually have 30 to 60 day termination notices.
Okay. So it's not, you're not committed for a year or 2 years with most of these plans. You can get out within maybe 90 days at the most.
Actually, you brought up another important question. So normally, yes. Normally, the answer to that question is yes, except for if you just credentialed with the dental plan, several of them are inserting 24-month minimum participation requirements where you do not have the ability. Yeah, you can't terminate and you can't negotiate. So with the solution to that, Art, actually, I was at a conference over the weekend, and funny thing is that one of the speakers gave one of the legal arguments that was not correct. And they said, yeah, you can strike out those clauses, but if the insurance carrier doesn't initial those as well, then the contract's not valid. I looked at tort law, like the general tort law that governs contract law in most states. It says the opposite, that if you strike out a clause in an insurance agreement and you initial it, and the insurance carrier signs that agreement, they are acknowledging the contract terms as it's written. Insurance agreements are not unilateral, meaning they're not one-sided. They look one-sided, but they're not. They're bilateral. You get to chime in on terms that are important to you that are not necessarily required for the government to be in the contract, such as fees, right? That's not regulated by the government, so you can negotiate them. And then specific contract language regarding termination clauses and 24-month participation agreements, strike those out. Never accept those terms.
Well, and obviously, you know, work with a licensed attorney who understands this, and I'm sure you have folks that you work with that do this. But what do the insurance companies do? Let's say that that clause is not struck out and there's a 24-month, and a dentist just says, you know what, I don't care, I'm done with you. They have recourse probably. Again, I know I don't think you're a licensed attorney, but they do have recourse against the dentist if they sign that contract and they basically go against what the terms of the contract say, right?
That is correct. And thank you for that disclosure, Art. Yeah, you're correct. I am not an attorney, so nothing that I'm saying is being represented as legal advice.
Right, right. Definitely not. You always want to be talking to a licensed attorney who specializes in this work.
Absolutely. So,
right, last thing I want to touch on with you, Ben, before we call it a podcast, is give our listeners some tips on how to deal with the concerns and objections that the patients have, because the doctor isn't generally going to have to deal with it. It's going to be the front office team. And the patients come up with, well, what are you doing? What does this mean? And I'm not feeling comfortable with this because, you know, my insurance is really important to me and I pay a lot of money. How do we do this? How do we, you know, train our front office team? Give us some tips on what they should be saying to overcome objections of patients.
Yes, yes. As it pertains to out-of-network, if you're an existing practice and you go through that six-month process, you will have patients that will leave.
Absolutely.
A given.
Yes.
You will have a patient that's going to make you feel uncomfortable with a very pressing, interrogative types of questions, you know, that kind of make you feel like you're the bad person. Just keep in mind that the majority of people are pleasant and they're easy to deal with. And when I'm dealing with a person in any business setting, personal setting, that they're belligerent and they are upset about something, always keep in mind is that our energy is what they're going to match. So if we raise our voice, theirs is going to get even higher. If we're calm, cool, and collected, and we take a minute, you know, we have pauses there, just, you know, we're looking the patient in the eye and we're nodding our head. I was like, I really understand. You know, I totally get what you're saying. I appreciate you saying, you have, you know, good acknowledgement is important for the human mind, is that the person on the other side that has some frustration, it is important for them, number one, to feel like you've heard them, right? And yet you're not going to ignore what their concern is. And so when you do a very basic acknowledgement saying, you know, I totally understand. Thank you for sharing that. I get it. But have a very calm tone of voice so that we lower the blood pressure of that person, you know, right. And hopefully get them to be a little bit more pleasant. But people will fight. People that are ready to fight will, and I say this, fight verbally, right? Not throwing fists. Now, hopefully that doesn't happen to any of you. But when it comes to verbal fights, most people are going to escalate their energy when you escalate yours. But when you de-escalate, this is actually very true in law enforcement, is that when you de-escalate your energy and you're in control of the situation or trying to be in control in the situation, normally the other side gives you plenty of time to explain your side, you know, with a little bit of, you know, you can work on a perk to give those patients in terms of a break or here and there, but just be calm with these patients and always steer back to quality. Is that, you know, that's a great question. I get it. Gosh, I wish these insurances would do a little bit more, you know, to kind of make it easy for you and us to understand their policies. But here's what I understand about it. You know, I kind of go through it and say, you know, this is what we've been told. We can re-verify it again. You know, but in the end, I just want you to know that, yeah, we did make this change towards out of network, primarily because of quality care. Our patients are finding that that's important to them. That's why we committed to it. But for your situation where there is a financial concern, we care about that too. So give me an opportunity to resolve this for you. Don't try to be a problem solver on the spot. Most people, whenever they're faced with verbal confrontation, you do have the fight, flight, and now what psychologists are calling the freeze response, where we just freeze up and we forget what we're going to say, right?
Yeah.
So never, I always recommend never try to be a problem solver on the spot, right? Just say, you know, let me look into this. Let me do you the courtesy of really taking some time to look into this to see what we can do, right? And I don't make any promises. I just leave it at that. And then I do dive into that for that patient. And what I do is when I call them back the next day, and you don't want to leave it for more than a day. In fact, I usually call them back first thing the next morning, but I call them back with an answer and then hopefully some accommodation, right? Keep in mind when you go out of network, if going out of network is important to you and your numbers look good, you're going to lose some patients. The type of patient that you want to run the risk of losing is the one to where the price to grief ratio and dealing with that patient that's angry at everything, that's a perfect opportunity to influence the patients to go somewhere else. But you want to leave that up to the patient to make that decision on their own. But you have to make it easy for them to leave. Don't charge them a records fee. You know, yeah, make it absolutely easy so that they don't blast you online with negative reviews, you know. But just always expect that is that if you're going to go out of network, you may have an uncomfortable confrontation here or there. That's just human nature. But always be willing to find a solution to make the patients happy with an invitation for them to say, hey, you know, sometimes if it's an insurance-driven patient, say, you know, I don't know that it's beneficial for you to use your benefits in that way here. We would love to continue there with your care, but the reality is that you might get better coverage if you went to an in-network practice that does take your insurance. And I proactively mention that to patients that historically they've been really, really hard to deal with, right? In an effort to give them an opportunity to help them by finding somebody that's in network, you know? So that with that said, Art, just keep your cool. Out of network confrontations, if you're using the 6-month communication protocol, are few and far in between because most patients would rather to just not show up than to show up and then have to fight with you, right? They're like, I just don't want to deal with it. We'll just go to another practice, you know? And that's okay too.
Ben Tune, this is one of the best interviews I've done in a long time. This is fantastic information. Doctors, I would strongly encourage you, if you are in network with insurance, if you are not in network, but you're thinking about going in network, and if you are especially thinking about going out of network, I would give Ben and his team a call because I've known Ben for 20 years and he has a stellar reputation because I'm very picky. I probably get at least 2 solicitations a week from people who want to be on my podcast, and rarely will I take someone. I go with people I know, and Ben is as good as it gets. Ben, one more time, give out your contact information, and so the listeners can call you if they want to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Art. You are a true gentleman. So our contact information, our website is veritasdentalresources.com. Veritas is spelled with a V, V as in Victor, ERITAS, dentalresources.com. Phone number 888-808-4513, or shoot me an email. It is ben@veritasdentalresources.com.
Okay, Ben, thank you so much. And stay with me as I take the podcast out. And again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for the honor and privilege of your time. We will continue to bring you great information on great topics in the finance and management genre. I don't know how you spell that, but I just like saying the word genre. Please make sure if you are looking for a dental CPA and you're not having good experience with your current CPA, give me a call, 657-279-3243, or A. Wiederman, that's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N, at idebailey.com. Please go to Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, 140 great CE courses at a very, very reasonable price, and the best clinical content out there. Go to www.decisionsindentistry.com. And again, folks, please sign up for the webinar April 23rd, 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific time with Dr. Sherilyn Sheets and Ben Tuene, who you just heard. Who is as much of an expert in this topic as anybody. April 23rd, 6 to 8th. Again, call me 657-279-3243 or email me at awiederman@idbailey.com and we'll get you signed up for the webinar. It's free and it's great information and it's also one unit of CPE. And with that, folks, I'm going to call it a podcast for today. That is it for this episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. The Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast is produced by Ide Bailey in partnership with Art Wiederman, CPA, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, and the Academy of Dental CPAs. For audience questions and feedback, email Art Wiederman, awiederman@idebailey.com. That's awiederman at eidebailly.com. Or you may call Art at 657-279-3243.